What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Meaning Of Podcast. This is the podcast where we talk about your favorite filmmakers and the deeper meaning within the films. And this week, we are talking about the new Netflix movies, Fear Street, or the Fear Street movies. We got all these back-to-back a week after a week. So it was a week between each one. First one was 1994, then 78, and then obviously 1666 and the finale of 94. We will be getting into spoilers, obviously, guys, because we did see all these movies and we want to do a little mini deep dive into them. But first, let me introduce my crew, my cast of characters. I'm here, obviously, with Sabrina and RB3, as usual. You guys saw these movies in very different ways. I think we all did. I saw these week by week. I think you did too, right, Sabrina?
Yeah, I watched them week by week, basically immediately when they dropped.
Okay. And then RB3, you just binged all these, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're doing besides this podcast, so I didn't really particularly care about these movies, but then so I waited. I want to make sure also my information, I always like to make sure I rewatch movies as close to when we record as possible. So I just binged all three of them like today, like leading up to today's event. So making sure I'll get the freshest, hottest takes coming out, fresh out of this trilogy, you know?
For sure. And obviously, guys, before we get into all these movies, I kind of want to do a little mini history about the history behind making these movies and the creation and the concept of these movies. And that is obviously that these have been in the making for a little bit, written by R.L. Stine. The original books came out quite a minute ago, but these movies were in development for a while. And the concept of releasing these in the same year was kind of the original concept that the director and the studio wanted to try and go for. Eventually, Netflix got the property and got the idea behind it. Stick with the director, which I think was a good concept and a good idea as well. And then they decided to, instead of releasing three in a year, which was going to be the original concept, they did it three in a month, basically, week by week. And this kind of presented a new kind of strategy in the Netflix market, because obviously we've done Netflix sequels before, we've done Netflix shows before, but mostly all the shows on Netflix are 100% bingeable, meaning all the episodes are there present. In this case, that wasn't the case, Sabrina. We got these week by week. I have to ask you specifically, because RB3 didn't get this experience, what did you think of the weekly wait of these Fear Street movies?
I actually really, really enjoyed it, especially when I finished up the third one, it really all like wrapped together so beautifully. So I thought it was great to kind of get people's attention with that first one rather than, unfortunately, because I know RB3 did it, but like I feel like you don't get the full effect by going through these three in like a binge way. I really, really appreciated that time in between each film, even just it's a week. It, like, so it goes by fast enough where you're still invested and you're still interested and still fresh in your mind, but then you have enough time to really latch onto the story, kind of come up with your own hypothesis. Every single film, as I was watching it, I was turning to like friends, whoever else I knew was watching it, and I was talking to them about it. And it brought up such interesting conversation. And I actually read these books when I was a kid. I read all of them. So yeah, so I know they didn't base it off any actual stories. They just based it off the concept of the Fear Street novels. So I enjoyed that kind of like release structure 100%.
I thought the release structure was actually one of the strengths of these movies. Yes. And I was just trolling RB3 because you binged them all. Because I don't know if it works binging wise. I mean, obviously, I don't think you got the right experience.
Let me get in here, because I think this is kind of like a ridiculous premise to begin with, right? How is this not a bingeable model for movies? When we think of movies, movies in and of themselves, when we think of a trilogy of movies, they're released over a span of 6 years or a span of 3 years, like minimum. With a year between, if they have two years in between, it's 6 years, right? Mm-hmm. This is released in a week, in a span of 3 weeks. This is the most compressed timeline of a release of a trilogy of a cinema history. It's never been done before. That to me makes it bingeable. That to me is taking what a 12-week run of a TV show is and compressing it into one day. That's the same exact thing. This is just taking it from one scale and making it on another scale for movies. Now, I think my opinion, I think y'all are kind of looking at this like a TV show, like they're releasing it week to week as a TV show. And I don't think of it that way. I kind of think of them as looking, I mean, I think of them as movies, and as movies, I think of them as one individual property, each and of himself. And I love binging trilogies. Like I binge the Dark Knight trilogy all the time. I binge the Spider-Man trilogy all the time. I binge the Back to the Future trilogy all the time. And it feels like a trilogy. This to me, I don't know. It doesn't really have that effect, because I think like the individual movies don't really hit to me. Like the first movie to me didn't hit at all. And I didn't really have that same kind of effect. Now, maybe if I did like wait a week to kind of talk about it over a little bit, I think maybe that would have been like a little bit more exciting. But well, isn't to be that honest, what we just said? but to be honest, these aren't my movies to begin with. Like sure. I'm being straight up with you. Yeah. I just don't like these kind of movies. I don't like Stranger Things. Like you know this, Ace. The first season of Stranger Things, I completely hate it. Like that's just not, this is like in that same bag, and I just wouldn't have bought into it, I think, to begin with. So sure. I think the week to week thing, I think it probably would have killed it even more for me. Like, I think if I would have watched the first one in the first week, I don't even think I would have been sold into watching the next two. So for me personally, I see it as, you know, like the TV world took the 12 weeks of TV and crunched it into one day. I see that as the same as what this is, what Netflix is doing to the movie world. They're taking a 6-year span of storytelling and crunching it into 3 weeks. And that to me makes it the binge scale, the scalable binge model of the movies, you know? And that's where I kind of laid my premise in. So, you know, I guess I'm saying all that to say, like, Netflix is kind of like changing the game and its release strategy for it. And I think like, you can say, I think it is an interesting release strategy. I think it works really effectively for people like y'all too, because you know, y'all already sold into it, especially Sabrina. Like, you read the books. I didn't even know they were based on books, to be honest.
I wasn't sold into it. I mean, I just watched the movies.
But did you watch them because, like, did you watch, but you watched all three of them because you already knew that there was going to be one coming week to week. Like, right? I mean, am I fair to assume that, or?
No, I just heard about the movies and I was like, sure, I'll check it out. I mean, it was literally
But hypothetically, if the first movie came out as its own movie, and then after it came out, a week later, we got an announcement that they're doing a Fear Street 1978, and then it's gonna come out 2 years from now. Do you think in that 2 years time period, you would have been rechecked into the sequel?
Sure. Why wouldn't I be? Yeah,
I mean, again, I wouldn't have been. So that's where a difference would have been. But I think as it came out week to week, I think that makes me more interested personally. But I don't think it's good enough of a first movie to keep me hooked in that sense.
Well, I actually agree with you with certain parts of this. Yeah, me too.
I feel like the first movie is the weakest.
Sure. I do think the first one is the weakest. And I also, when I was going into this, I was aware that there was going to be three parts week to week. I thought it was going to be more of an anthology. I didn't think it was going to have this kind of connective like tissue throughout all these three films. But because of what it is, I do think the best possible release structure is what they did. And I do totally get what you said, RB3, because I kind of did see this as like a little mini series. Like, it was kind of a fun thing. Like, it's almost like, oh, we get a new one next week. Like, it was something to look forward to for the past few weeks, because I definitely was invested. I liked the first one enough, and then I had an idea of what it was going for. The second it was like 1978 and we got that at the end of the first one, I was like, this is so cool. I think it's an homage to all these interesting eras of horror, and also just incorporating these different elements that I feel like we're only tackling with like modern cinema, you know, like lesbian relationships and different things like that. So us going like back in time and playing with all these different ideas, I thought it was really, really cool, because visiting films like, not Scream necessarily, but Friday the 13th or Nightmare on Elm Street, sometimes I feel like they are a little safe with what they're trying to do or say, and there's not really much there. I do feel like it's pretty superficial. So I feel like this like added a layer of depth to it. So that's why I was hooked in personally, because I am a fan of the horror genre.
I think that's a good point. And what you're saying too, RB3, your last point is kind of what I agree on the most, and what Sabrina kind of said is that I think the concept kind of sold you the most, right? Where you're just like, That was okay, but I'll stick around for the second one because it feels like a different movie. It's like a completely different movie, like you said, Sabrina, almost anthology-like, where it's Black Mirror-esque, right? Where it's like you just saw one thing that's kind of similar thematically as far as like sci-fi, a creepy story. Now you're going to get a second one. You didn't really care for the first one, but you're kind of on board with the concept that you're just like, you know what? I'll check out a second episode of Black Mirror or a second movie of Black Mirror, because Black Mirror's episodes are considered to be movies. When you look at Emmy nominations and Emmy votings, they're considered to be individual TV movies. So it's kind of the same thing as far as like, oh, 1978. Now it's kind of like, it's the same world, but it's a different era. And I'm just like, sure, I'll watch it. I'll check it out. Where it's mainly the concept that kind of sold me the most. But I did feel like the week-to-week waiting kind of made it a little better for me, because I think if it was bingeable, it could have been me being like, yeah, that was okay. I think we'll check out the second one in like a month, 2 months, well, 3 months.
Because the ending of the first one, it was a surprise that it was like, oh, we're going back to 78, because we had so much discussion on like the history of Shadyside and things like that. So the second that happened, I was like, oh, hell yeah. I just have to wait a week. I don't have to wait a year. None of that kind of stuff. And I do think it's perfect. Also, it dropping on Netflix, because I think if these were released theatrically, and obviously you couldn't do like the 3 weeks, but if it was released theatrically, like one per year, I don't know if it would just like keep having that momentum. Cause a lot of people were talking about it online, and I know like TikTok generation, which I know Andres, we've already talked about, we're definitely going to get into that, but they're really, really embracing these films. So one thing that I really respect about this is younger audiences kind of diving into different like horror tropes and seeing different eras of horror. So I think it's cool. I mean, these aren't like Oscar nominated. It's not like we're talking about The Witch when we're talking about 1666.
Yeah, but they're not supposed to be. Almost there. Yeah.
Exactly.
They're supposed to be self-aware homages, tongue-in-cheek, winking at the camera. Like RB3, I'm not sure why you hate these so much, but you can like a movie like Deadpool.
When that happens. This like, is crazy.
You like Deadpool?
This happens every time. It's, listen, I get they're not like high expectations. I get it.
They're supposed to be like...
We can expect, if it's a teeny bopper movie, you could be a teeny bopper movie. The Hunger Games is a teeny bopper movie. Harry Potter is a teeny bopper movie.
But they're excellent.
They're excellent. They're well made. And I don't know if it's like the most... like the worst expectation for at least to ask these movies to be like at least takes, I don't know. I mean, I don't
well,
know.
Think about
you,
it
said
this
they're
way,
not,
man.
You said they're not safe, Sabrina. I've kind of felt like the first two were the safest Netflix movies I've seen in a long time. Like the third one is really the one that took like the most risk, but I felt like the 94 really just felt like an 80s movie. And the 78 one felt like another 80s movie, like just like slightly different. I felt like if they were going for some 90s vibe, I felt like they could have done some, I felt like they really could have done like some Scream or some self-referential or some meta commentary or something like that to really go for like that 90s era. But they're leaning more into, like you said, the Friday the 13th or the Jasons or like all these other like kind of slasher movies during that time, which is cool. But again, I don't know. That's not like, that's, I guess it's, again, I'm a little biased because it's not my bread and butter. But I don't know. I feel like they were, I don't know. I feel like they were a little safer than most movies. And I feel like they didn't really get into any like kind of deeper meanings until the third one for me. So
damn, I push back on that. And the only thing is because I read these books probably when I was like 9 years old. And I would say the target audience for this would be, I was a little bit on the younger side, but I wasn't scared of stuff. I was already watching horror films. I would say target audience would be like teenagers, like 13 to 17 would be really where it's at. So the fact that it can appeal to this audience, but then also to some of us, because I've seen a lot of people giving it praise. I do think it's not as safe as you're kind of like playing it out to be. I feel like it's safe for the eras that they're choosing. Like, or it's still, they're still doing a lot for the eras that they're choosing, like 94 and all these different things, especially when we're talking about like a lot of the themes of the film. And even just like the fact that our main characters are in a lesbian relationship, they're really young and it's not hypersexualized or anything like that. And also it's not like patting itself on the back for displaying this. It's just like, these are two normal people, totally normal thing. And that's why I think it's like, it's more than too safe, but I agree with a lot of what you're saying. It personally worked for me. I think all the elements were there to make it really interesting and exciting and kind of something fresh. They definitely didn't lean into like 100% like Scream meta self-aware in the first one. And that's why I kind of think it's the weakest. I feel like they could have went a little deeper in that, but.
Yeah, it's super meta. It's super self-aware. That's kind of what they're going for, as I said before, because I feel like that's what they're going for. They're really
What sense? Like, I feel like it's the most straightforward, like, slasher horror movie, like, ever. Like, in my opinion, I don't know. Is it not, like...
I'm saying references and like, callbacks.
Yeah, it's Stranger Things. It's Stranger Things again. Oh, my gosh. They literally can't take two sentences if I'm referencing Stephen King. Like...
I don't see that necessarily as, like, a negative. I see that as something that might be a positive. Like, I don't think... everyone gets everything as we do, or everyone gets every reference as we do. I think, like Sabrina said, most people who are watching this movie, who are enjoying it or making TikToks about it, are 14-year-olds. Like, they didn't grow up with Stephen King and with all these horror movies and with Scream. They've never seen it.
And this could be like a gateway to it. This is cool. Like, they could now check out these different things.
This is for teenagers, fam. Like, she even said it in an interview. I listened to an interview with the director, and she said, I made these for teenagers, like, literally for TikTok kids. And you can tell when you watch the movie, because it is very, very, I think the most negative aspect of the first one is the quick cuts and the quick pacing. I was like, oh my God, I feel like I'm watching a TikTok, because of how many cuts and how many needle drops there are. It's like song, 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 TikTok, TikTok. I was like, man, this is a TikTok. It's a TikTok
and
movie.
They only play 30 again, seconds I'm of each not, song too.
Exactly, which is TikTok. And I was like, I'm not a TikToker. I'm not a kid. I'm not 14. But I get it, like, maybe a 14-year-old might enjoy this for sure. But I don't feel like references and callbacks and all that stuff is necessarily a negative, especially for an audience that is not seeing this stuff like we do. They're not like film historians or horror historians. So I don't know, man. I think it's, again, I do feel like
I don't like it. I mean, I get it. I get y'all saying like it's good for TikTokers and teenagers. I'm just telling y'all, I hate it. I can't stand it. I couldn't stand it in Stranger Things. I can't stand it in any other Netflix thing that they do. It's a personal bias with me. So, you know, that's on me.
Yeah, but I almost feel like it's at a point now, man, where how much. Okay, you're right. Nostalgia is always going to be heavy, right? But even we agree that nostalgia, we've agreed in the past, RB3, that nostalgia for different eras might be kind of a cool thing, right? Where if we are getting something that's a little bit more 90s nostalgia, that's not something we necessarily see all the time versus 80s nostalgia or 70s nostalgia.
What was distinctly 90s about the first movie?
Everything in the movie. Everything in
the 90s. Besides the music and the cars, like the music movies, and the cars, it the felt fashion, like an 80s movie.
The
it
fashion, felt, the songs, the hardware, the software.
They literally had like only, metal, I'm only happy when it 90s. Rains. No, they literally have, I'm only happy when it rains by Garbage. They have like Nirvana, the fashion, everything. I feel like they were definitely like mixing up like Scream, Freaks and Geeks, all these different ideas in terms of like visually the way that it looks. So I feel like
that's 90s. I feel like if you take every,
if you take every song music drop out of that and replace it with an 80s song, it'll feel just like an 80s movie. I guarantee you. Ooh. I disagree with that.
As someone who, out of the only one here who grew up in early 90s, and y'all did it.
But what style? Y'all, okay, y'all are giving me.
I know for a fact that it was 90s because I was there.
You're giving me music and giving me production design and you're giving me things. I'm talking about like what thematically, what movies did it represent during that time? I get what you. Maybe there is a little like Freaks and Geeks and a little Scream. I didn't see the Scream. Yeah. I didn't see any like kind of like. Interesting that it felt like a 2021 movie that is shot the same way as Stranger Things. It's shot the same way as every other 80s set movie. That's just the way it felt to me, except it didn't, I don't know. If there was like distinctly, it looks like, for example, Captain Marvel, right? Not even like the best example of a 90s movie because it's barely even like leans into this 90s-ness outside of the music. But at least like there is a whole moment where they're like taking a bus, like, and they're like reading, you know, and we see like the reading the Kevin Smith what was it, Mallrats and the Stan Lee thing. Like, they really gave you a direct like a direct pathway into like the 90s, along with, I felt like a good like structural like representation of like the 90s looking aliens, like the Independence Day. I don't know. To me, it just felt like the mall setting, the I don't know. Again, maybe I'm biased.
Even like because the way it the feels... school looked, even like the way that the school looked when they had like they did like an assembly, different things like that when they were talking about like the murder in the beginning. The way everybody looked when I was going through it, and I know I didn't grow up in this era, but I have seen obviously a lot of films, as has RB3. So we get it from that. I don't know. It's the music, the way the school era was set up.
I don't know. I just feel like they leaned into it on a nostalgic level, but didn't lean into it on any thematic or stylistic levels. That's what I'm saying.
I feel like they did maybe in the second film. I mean, I'm sorry, in the last film. Because
the last film felt
like... You get 94 Part 2, which is definitely a different feel, and I feel like we're going to get into that for sure. Let's quickly finish up on the first film, because I think we all agree that maybe it's not the strongest. I agree with you, Sabrina, that I do feel like the relationship might be the most groundbreaking aspect of the first film, considering we don't see that too much, and we have to keep reiterating the fact that, hey... We don't see that too much. It's just not something that is very common. Also, the lead, I believe her name is Kiana Maeda.
Maeda,
which it sounds like Brazilian or Portuguese. But we get her, we get her brother in the film as well, and all the other cast members who are part of the core group. Yeah, go ahead, Sabrina.
Well, I do think like, overall, even though I think this is the weakest, it was still definitely enough to get me hooked on it immediately.
It was a good pitch, right?
I thought it was very good.
Like, hey, here's this. And I was like, ah, I kind of buy into some characters, into some
It was
aspects.
Fun. It went by quickly. I thought it was really cool that they actually, another groundbreaking thing is actually having teenagers play teenagers. Like, when do we ever genuinely see that, especially in something like a horror film, looking back on stuff like I Know What You Did Last Summer, or whatever. It's always like 30-year-olds playing teenagers. And literally 90s movies. And we actually have teenagers playing them, which obviously like Netflix has done a really good job at with all their like little like To All the Boys I Loved Before, Kissing Booth, all that kind of stuff. But it's just genuinely really cool. And I do like the opening because I wasn't expecting it. But the second I saw it, I was like, that's 100% what they're going for. Maya Hawke in the beginning being like the first kill, because now she's like the new... It girl. She's been in a lot of films like Gia Coppola's mainstream, of course, being introduced on Stranger Things and Nepotism. She's a Nepotism baby, Uma Thurman and Ethan Hawke's daughter. And yes. I thought it was cool that she's the biggest name easily. And then they kill her off in the beginning, just like we saw with Drew Barrymore and Scream. And of course, if somebody's watching this before ever seeing Scream, this is their first time kind of seeing something like that. And I do think that that's really interesting and cool, especially with the fan base that Maya Hawke has already built up on Netflix.
For sure.
That's a good one. I wouldn't have caught that. That's a good one. That's a good connection to me. I wouldn't have caught that. See, there you go. It maybe went from like a 3 to like a 3.5 now, or like a 4 for me. So.
I'm surprised it was even at a 3 by the way you were talking about it.
Yeah.
I was like, you're 0 by far. By the way you're talking about it, man. Either way, yeah, I feel like the first one is a good setup, right? It tells you what the story is, it tells you who the characters are, it tells you a little bit of backstory.
The world building.
Which I thought
was really great. Yeah.
Yeah. And it works because I feel like it kind of sets up the rest of the world where you're interested enough to potentially check out the second one. And I feel like that is kind of a good idea to make the first one more of a pitch for the rest of the films and kind of make you like, not necessarily the story, but make you like the characters enough to kind of come back to them, especially by the end of the film.
Oh my gosh. I mean, even with the kills that we got throughout, I really did not expect basically everybody to die except for two main characters and the younger brother, Josh. I really did not expect like the whole like bread cutter scene and stuff like that. Totally over the top, totally ridiculous. And there's a self-awareness in that. I didn't expect it. And then when it happened, I'm like, this is definitely 100% a reference and an homage to all these ridiculous ways that when we have so many sequels to horror films in like the 70s, 80s, and 90s, the way that kills kept having to get more intricate and just like ridiculous to a certain point. It's just, I thought it was nuts. And I really, really love the way that it ended, introducing 1978.
Yeah. RB3, any final thoughts, man, before we go to break? I definitely want to give you a shot.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know what else is for me to say. I mean, okay. according to Wikipedia, there's one review from Vulture that I think kind of sums up like kind of perfectly where I kind of stand on this a little bit. Where Get Out or The Babadook uses horror to explore razor-tooth hunger of right liberal supposed allies and the terror of feeling unable to trust your own mental state. Plenty of other titles end up just pinning themselves to a larger concept in ways that range from the clumsiness obvious of too grossly cynical. But 1994 feels untethered to those obligations. So basically what that review is saying, like, they don't really care about making any deeper things. They don't really care about, like, having some cynical point or something. It's just a straightforward movie. And, like, you know, as that, it definitely rocks. Like, it definitely is a cool movie. I think I probably go into every film with a little bit higher, like, expectations. And that probably, like, definitely sours certain things for me. But I definitely think as its own, it definitely, like, you know, it's cool. It wouldn't have hooked me, but that's just because of my, like, personal bias. But, you know, I'm happy. Obviously, it got, like, an 83% Rotten Tomatoes. People was rocking with it, so... very happy that it's like successful. And you know, we're gonna talk about the other two later. I actually did end up really liking it. Well, not really liking, but I liked the third one, so.
Correct yourself, you were too enthusiastic. I ended up really liking, well, not really, but I liked it.
Yeah, third one's good.
With that being said, y'all, we're gonna be talking about the third one after this break, as well as 1978, so make sure you guys stick around.
This ain't funny, so don't you dare laugh. With the 4/5 divide you in half. You getting at me equals a club bath. You do the math, take you out the equation. This ain't funny, so don't you dare laugh.
Have you seen the new M. Night Shyamalan movie, Old? Well, if not, check out Sabrina and RB3's review exclusively on First Cut. Enjoy!
In the trailer, the dialogue is just so jarring. They're constantly like explaining everything around them. And I feel like that kind of happens in the film as well. I do think there's like awkward acting. We have heavy hitters. We have people who have already, even if they're like young or they've had a long career, they're really, really talented. Eliza Scanlon, Thomasin McKenzie, Vicky Krieps. Like there's a lot of people in this that I know and we have seen that are talented actors. And it just didn't lend itself. I think the only person that genuinely had a lot of good dramatic moments that actually felt like real and authentic in any way was Alex Wolff. I think Alex Wolff was the standout in terms of acting for this one. I still feel like throughout this film, they were definitely over-explaining instead of like trusting the audience and the intelligence of the audience enough. You know, every time that they kind of had these moments when our characters are stopping and explaining and talking about something, it kind of put like a screeching halt to the tension. And for a film like this, as the tension is building up, you don't want to have something that's a detriment to that and a detriment to the audience. I'm still fascinated by this film. And once I got over like the clunkiness of the beginning of it, I was interested and genuinely invested.
Come along, children. Now we're going to have a little music.
What is up, guys? We're back talking about the Fear Street movies. Now we're going to be talking about the final two, which is 1978 and 1666. Obviously, we're going to talk about 1978 first, which is clearly an homage to Friday the 13th, Camp Crystal Lake. That kind of camp hideaway killer kind of shows up in the middle of the night kind of thing in the middle of the woods, which is obviously pretty creepy. I don't know if you guys have ever been to camp before. No. Have you guys been to camp? None? Mm-hmm. None of you guys? Neither of y'all? Damn, bro, that's literally like a me thing. That's like a night.
I did go to math camp. I used to go to math camp.
But is it like in the middle of the woods, like in the middle of nowhere?
We had a cabin. Okay. We didn't do like tents and everything, but we did have like cabins and like a little same kind of setup.
You know, like if you've been in the woods like at like 1 a.m, 2 a.m, it's creepy. Like it's actually kind of creepy. Like I don't know if y'all have ever done that, but as someone who went to camp like almost every year, when I was a kid, it was a creepy vibe, man. Like it actually kind of gets you in that creepy mood. So I get why, you know, back in the day, you know, filmmakers made those movies to be in the woods and to make that kind of concept. But obviously this movie centers around two sisters. This is I forget the name of the girl in the movie. Ziggy is her name, who is obviously later older Jillian Jacobs, who we meet at the end of 1984. We also meet her sister, who is the very prissy, proper, preppy girl who's trying to be a Sunny Valor, even though she's a Shady Cider. And the Hatchet Man Killer, as I call him, or I think it's called like the Nightwing Killer, possesses Tommy Wheeler, I think his name was. And eventually he becomes another killer inside this camp. I can't lie, y'all. I think this might be my favorite one, just because I feel like it's the most fun. RB3, bro. Everyone's got their taste, bro. It's okay.
Yeah, you're
it's
right. Okay. You're right.
You don't gotta lose your mind.
Yeah, it's yeah, all good. Yeah. You're right. I'm gonna shut.
I just had fun. I had fun. I think it's a blast. I think it's one of those movies where it really, like, not everything. You know, like you said, RB3, not everything has to be like a social commentary on the issues that we face. Like, it was just a goofy, fun movie where I was like, this could be a fun little like horror maze. Like, that's what I thought. I was like, this is kind of like a fun, cool, creepy vibes in the middle of the woods, hatchet killer. You literally find a tunnel and you discover like a bunch of Satan shit. And you're just like, yo, this is wild shit. Satan shit everywhere, and I'm freaked out. And I was like, this is kind of like, it's got creepy vibes, and I kind of like that. I think the vibes are set up really well, which is why I said on Twitter, I was like, I vibe with it. Because I think that's mainly what it is. It's mainly about vibes. It's not necessarily about like some sort of thinking project that you're gonna write your school paper on. It's mainly about the feel that it makes you feel inside the movie, which is why I think I enjoyed 1978 the most. RB3, take it away.
Sorry, you go, Sabrina.
Well, just to really quickly, weeks ago, actually like a very, very long time ago, we talked about a possible like Netflix amusement park, and we talked about like what they could possibly do. Imagine something like around Halloween, whenever all like Knott's Berry Farm, everybody like rebrands for Halloween. Stuff like this is perfect. They are really, really in their bag. Exactly. And like, that's what you said. You said like, this is like an amusement, like little like maze or like whatever. Something like this would be perfect. So Netflix is really, really dipping their toe. I can't handle RB3 with his cynicism over there.
Because I really do feel like that's what 100%. This was literally like, I literally thought this is perfect for like a Halloween horror maze.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you that it is already in the works. I guarantee it, because that's kind of what it represented. It represented more of a feel, a vibe, a creepiness, a nostalgia based on older movies. But I feel like that's definitely what it was. And that's why I liked it the most. But RB3, I know you have some thoughts, so go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, again, I'm not a nostalgia guy. Let me say it in case I haven't said it on a podcast before. I'm sure I have in early episodes, but there is a period of cinema that I actually legitimately do not like. And that is from 77 to like 89. From that whole time period, I think is almost like a complete wasteland. There are some great movies in there. There are some great classic movies in there, a lot of which I will reference some of my favorites, like Raging Bull, Do the Right Thing, of course, the original Star Wars. I mean, this is the beginning of the postmodern era. That's what they call in film school, like the postmodern era, 77 when Star Wars came out. And of course, you know, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, another one of my favorites, Blade Runner. So I think those are some of my favorites, but the reason why they're my favorites is because they stand out in like a landfill of like garbage. Like, there wasn't any good movies that were coming out, maybe like three or four like in a year or five in a year. And the rest of them were just like Arnold or Halloween sequels or Sylvester Stallone or I can go endless. I mean, there's some good comedies too. I gotta shout out like Working Girl, like that's one I watched really recently. I love from the 80s. A lot of good comedies too, but again, it's not, I don't know, there's definitely, I have a little bit of disdain towards like nostalgia for that era. And again, you know, this is not necessarily one. I mean, they go full nostalgia for this. I mean, I thought the 90s one was whatever. And maybe the 90s thing feels a little more invisible to me, because I guess it just went over my head a little bit, you know? But for this one, I mean, they went full, they let you know, like, this is going to be a full 80s camp, like, you know, camp campy horror movie, like with the over-the-top violence, with the 100 stabs. But, you know, they're also going to give you that 2021, like, extra gory effect of, like, making sure you see all the blood and mm-hmm. everybody pour out and, you know, everything. So it was just, it was a lot. I didn't like this one that much. I can't really find too much of too many of the characters to really get behind. And I like the whole like sister relationship between like the two sisters, I thought was really nice, and it paid off really well at the end because they spent most of the movie like apart from each other. I felt like that aspect of it was really interesting, but I felt like they. I mean, yeah, there wasn't a lot for me in this one. So,
yeah, I would say out of the three of them, this is my second favorite. This definitely takes everything that the first kind of set out the groundwork and the foundation, and then it grew upon it. So, of course, we're revisiting this era, and I obviously 94 is going off of Scream, and Scream came out in 96. So it's like 94 is just like 2 years before. This one's 78. The first Friday the 13th came out in 1980. I don't know if it's intentional to always like set it like 2 years before that first film originally came out. But I mean, that's the way that it looks. And it's based around all this. And I love that, Andres, earlier you brought up that idea of camp. At this time, in the horror genre, you know, like they were preying upon all these different ideas of like innocence and different things like that and how they could flip it on its head. You're at camp, you're isolated. This is something that's supposed to be like really fun. It's all young people. There are no adults literally present even in this area whatsoever. So I thought that was really interesting. It adds that extra level of like creepiness because one, we already got this introduced in the first one, but these killers they're possessed and they're satanic, they're demonic. So they are unnaturally strong. It's kind of what we see in horror. That's like Scream did that differently, where it's literally just humans. But of course, we're talking about Jason, we're talking about Freddy. They're inhuman, they're extra, extra strong. You can't beat them. So when you're isolated in the woods, the only option is literally you have to get out of there because you can't outrun them. You can't do whatever. So I thought it was really interesting that, you know, this entire time we think Sarah Fear is like the bad guy in all of this. And she's the one that put her curse on this town. And it kept it compelling within the first one going to the second one. And I was like, I want to learn so much more. But when we were getting those flashbacks and we're getting these connections to her kind of stamp on this town, I just found it to be so interesting. And of course, the relationship between Cindy and Ziggy, they're kind of going back and forth. I also love that it really did lean into these like horror tropes and like all these different things with the characters. Like we have the super uptight, like virginal person. We have like the alternative goth, hypersexualized, all that kind of stuff. And then we have
the virginal,
you know, it's all of that. And they really, really played into it because they weren't just doing it as an homage. They were doing it as like a wink and nod. Like these people don't actually exist. These are tropes that are so outdated and we're aware that they're outdated. Like I didn't get a like bland feeling from this at all.
Were the filmmakers aware that they were undated? I mean, that's just my question though. Were the filmmakers aware?
I really do. I really had the feeling that they were completely aware about what they were doing and leaning into it 100%.
Like clearly Ziggy's sister is a caricature, right? Like she's not supposed to, she's literally wide-eyed and she's like, we have to do the right thing, okay? Like we have to make sure, and like she's a caricature. She's not supposed to be taken so seriously. And obviously by the end, we get a little bit of emotion from her. That's kind of like the cherry on top as far as like, oh, you didn't really see that coming. That's why you like that part the most, RB3, because it was kind of like a surprise as far as like what we got so far was like a caricature and a throwback. And that's kind of what it is. It's a throwback. It's
and we're supposed to see like how ridiculous it is.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a reflection of like these old movies that are supposed to be super over the top, super ridiculous. Yeah. Like I was laughing the whole time. Like, I don't know about y'all. Like I didn't watch this movie like with my cigar and my glasses and like, you know, I'm literally just cracking up and I'm just like, ha, look at that. Like, oh my God. Oh yeah, this is creepy. Like I was having a good time. And I think that's the point. The point is to be goofy and to have a good time and not to take it so seriously and to just like point out things and be like, I wonder.
Because I mean, have you gone back and watched like Friday the 13th and stuff like that? Like they haven't aged well because they are goofy.
No, they haven't.
Yes. Honestly, they're more goofy than scary. Yes. And I still enjoy them because of nostalgia purposes. They're but goofy. This one has that perfect mix of genuinely being goofy, leaning into it, but it is still kind of really, really scary and super intimidating. I am... All these three films, they made me squirm. They made me uneasy. I love that kind of thing. I want to feel like, go, run. I want to be shouting at the screen, doing all of that. And I want to be invested and involved. And that's what this did for me.
Yeah, I really do feel like it definitely had that feel and those vibes for sure. I laugh because I really did laugh the majority of this film because there's even that scene where when Tommy finally gets his little potato sack over his head and that's supposed to be his creepy mask and it's got blood sticking out of it and the score just goes like, and it's just him with the mask. And I was like, that's funny. It's supposed to be
okay.
Funny.
Maybe all of this went over my head. Maybe it went over your head. Back
I'm and
just
sorry.
Really watch like these movies because I didn't get this irony. I felt like all of it was a little
they are 100% tongue in cheek into this,
winking at the camera. Okay, the also. Whole time.
Also, I feel
not
like
supposed to be anything.
Also,
else.
partially, why I might feel that way. Partially, why I probably feel like it's not like this. It's not like the most outlandish, like you know, thing to fit into because it does fit into those eras of movies, like you were saying, Sabrina. It does feel like something that will be like out of those movies, and I felt like. Okay, they're just doing it again, but just for a new generation. And that's what a lot of like Netflix, that's what a lot of these kind of movies feel like. That's what a lot of nostalgia trip movies feel like. It's just them doing it again, a little more exaggerated. That's what, I mean, heck, I hate to say it. That's what the new Star Wars trilogy is. Like, that is like giving us a more exaggerated version of like the old characters. Like, again, like that's just what our place in cinema is. And I don't necessarily think that's the most like, that's the place I want to be in.
How did you feel about Halloween 2018? Because I felt like that's exactly what that was doing. It took everything from the original Halloween being like, okay, yes, he can't be killed. He's absolutely ridiculous doing all of that. But then adding that like that relationship dynamic between the family and adding that layer because all of these old horror movies, you're not ever rooting for anyone. You're not even really ever usually rooting for the final girl in stuff like Friday the 13th. Halloween is a little bit different because she's iconic, of course, Jamie Lee Curtis in that one. But those are all pretty much soulless. So I feel like adding that layer, leaning into everything, but also adding the relationship between the two sisters, I think is what keeps that refreshing and is introducing all these ideas for a new audience, but in a much better way than cinema did it 30 years ago, because those genuinely were soulless.
And you know, to go to what you're talking about with the 2018 Halloween, like I actually do like that because it does feel like it's a little more exaggerated Michael Myers and exaggerated Jamie Lee Curtis. But at the same time, it also feels like, you know, they also give you PTSD. They give you mental health, like from Jamie Lee Curtis's character experiencing PTSD. They give you the mental health aspect of it, like with Dr. Loomis or the Dr. Loomis like new character actually like trying to be like actually wanting to free Michael and like study him and all that kind of stuff. So like I feel like they gave us a little bit more, and I feel like this movie did give us a little bit more with the sister relationship. I mean, I feel like that to me was the best part, but I feel like that was the only part that felt like different. I feel like there wasn't a lot else to give it a little more distinction, I guess. And I don't know what it would have taken. I don't know if it would have taken them literally winking at the camera for me to get it. If they would have literally took some fourth wall breaking to be like, hey, like this is what they're doing. But to me, it just felt like It felt like an 80s movie with 2021 blood. That's just what it felt like to me. Like
I felt like they winked a lot, bro. I don't know. Maybe I just, I saw a lot of winking. Like homie straight up almost winked when I just said the scene that I named. Like when he put the potato sack and he like turned to the camera with the, I was like, that's a wink.
That's
like it's literally supposed to get a laugh out of you. And it's supposed to be like, it's supposed to be kind of like that funny moment as far as like you're like, oh, I get it, fourth wall break, where he almost like turns to the camera and he's like, see, you know what I'm doing, I'm about to kill some kids. Like I felt like that's what essentially what it was saying. And I feel like, again, kind of going back to what we were talking about in the beginning in part one, where we're talking about, again, a teenage audience who didn't see these films. Like, I'm telling y'all, they didn't. Like you said, Sabrina, you've been on TikTok. These films are all over TikTok. I'm talking about the Fear Street movies are all over TikTok, because kids are liking them and watching them for the first time. And they're just like, yo, wasn't that crazy? Wasn't that goofy? Wasn't that ridiculous? Like, because they didn't get that weird goofiness and ridiculousness from our different era that other people grew up in or other people know about, like you, RB30, because you are an actual film school major. So it's one of those things where I feel like that's the audience it's supposed to be for kids.
Well, yeah, because we also have another Stranger Things actor with Sadie Sink playing Ziggy. And also we are diving into like the PTSD Jillian Jacobs like kind of is experiencing from the situation all those years later. So we kind of have that passing the torch, passing the mantle of like victims, like somebody who had already gone to it. And then you revisit that person to be able to kind of like figure out what to do going forward. And then these two groups are able to kind of work together to kind of figure out how to combat this thing that's been like haunting the town for so long. I find it to be so interesting. And TikTok generation, Gen Z kids, which I know RB3 and I are Gen Z. So now we're representing the two sides of why Gen Z might embrace or not like this movie. But the Stranger Things kids are literally like a ticket to success with Gen Z. You put them in anything and these kids will 100% watch it. So using Maya Hawke in the first one, using Sadie Sink in this one, it makes so much sense. Because of course, Netflix likes to work with a lot of the same actors anyway, whenever they're creating something. So she is so great and she's so charismatic and she's kind of playing a similar character than she did in Stranger Things too. Like another like tomboy, very independent, headstrong type of young girl. And I just really, really liked it. I liked this character then having to become like vulnerable later on because of like the horror she's experiencing in her world. And again, representing that like that innocence of this camp where you're supposed to go hang out, sit by the fire, roast some marshmallows, and how that changes in like a blink of an eye because of something like this. Also, I feel like if this generation goes back and watches Friday the 13th, I feel like they're going to be extremely disappointed, because I do feel like this is a lot smarter than, unfortunately, as much as I love those movies, than what they were.
I mean, it definitely like has the benefit of being modern, and definitely has the benefit of like a little bit more class when it comes to like its representation of certain things. I do think when it comes to like the relationships between the team, I feel like, for one, like the actual acting in these movies are like way better than what we would have ever seen in like an actual 1990s horror movie or 1978 like horror movie, like besides this few exceptions of like Halloween. But even in Halloween, like Jamie Lee Curtis and a couple of others are really the only good ones. All the background characters are kind of lame. So I do give it that. Like, I do think they do give personality and life to a lot of the campers in the second one. And I think I do think there were some good, I do think, like, I guess that's why I get a little conflicted, because I do think the scary aspects, or I guess the slasher aspects or the killing aspects, like those are actually like decently done. Like those are like well directed, I feel like, scenes that like play like really well like on their own. So I don't know. I guess like I'm reading a movie through that context, I'm like, okay, these are just playing like really good, well done scenes. I guess I'm just reading the rest of it like that. But I don't know. I guess I'm gonna implore myself after this podcast to really go back and like relook at these movies from like a different lens, because maybe I took it way too seriously. I probably did take it too seriously.
I genuinely think the binge model is what did it. The binge model, and then having it like right, you have to talk about it right afterwards, so you don't get a lot of time to sit with like each film and like reflect on it, which I do think is what's great about these.
I agree, because again, the first time I saw 94, I was like, oh, you know, that was like ridiculous. Like, I don't know if I can hang with that. But then the more I thought about it, the more I was like, yeah, but it was just kind of supposed to be. And the more I was like, I guess if it's supposed to be ridiculous, I guess I'm cool with it. And then by the second one, when it came around, I was like, oh, this is fun. It's creepy. It's got some vibes. Like, it's got scares. It's got a cool killer. It's got that little cool tunnel scene that we get at the very end. And that's why I think by the time I was, the second one came around, I was kind of ready for it. But I definitely want to get to the third one because I know it's one that I think both of you guys liked a lot more. I want to pass it over to you, Sabrina, because I know you appreciated this one as well. And I'm just going to step away one second. I just got to check one thing. Sorry, guys.
No worries. All right. Fear Street 1666. I really, really enjoyed this one. I think it was so cool to go back. Like I kind of mentioned earlier, it's like the witch era. So we have all these characters kind of experiencing this time where we have our villain, who we think of is the villain at the time, Sarah Fear, and what she had to go through in basically like a few days in her life and kind of how everything in this town came to fruition, how this entire thing has been lasting for centuries. So I do think it's pretty interesting because I thought this was easily my favorite one by like a landslide, because of course, like I said, I originally thought these films were going to be way more anthology. I did not know that they were going to actually have a through line. Of course, when we have Jillian Jacobs and our other main characters, we have that through line between all three of these films. But I love how this one just concluded all these different ideas. And I do think these films don't stand great on their own because of that through line, but I'm not upset about this at all. I feel like for anybody who's like interested in this type of like filmmaking, even looking at our own actual history, of course, we have like the Salem witch trials and all these different ideas. It is very, very real. And it is such a crazy time to look back on because people try to explain away paranoia and all these different things that happened at that time in real life. So seeing it come to fruition with Sarah Fear. And also, we haven't even mentioned him yet, but the sheriff, Nick Good. Of course, we see him in 94 and he's an adult. And then we see him in 78 and he's a teenager, has a crush on Sadie Sink. That was insane. Because I was like, this guy is sketchy. His brother's the mayor. He's the sheriff. He's also just like basically turning a blind eye to everything. Because if this was happening in your town, I feel like any sane person would try to get to the bottom of it as best as possible, but he's just kind of ignoring it at this point. And I thought that was insane. I thought this entire thing was crazy. I absolutely love the storyline of these kids kind of sneaking out. What eventually happens to the pastor of the town, gets possessed and he kills the children. I thought that was crazy and brutal. I did not expect to see that at all when I first started watching this film. So I love this one.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was kind of going to comment on your witch comment too. I don't know if you guys have seen that TikTok where the lady is like, I forgot what it is. I'm sure you know it better than I do, Sabrina. I don't know if we're thinking about the same one. Where it's like, hey, what do you think of this sign? And she's like, oh, it's beautiful. I love that word. And he's like, how do you know how to read? You witch? Yeah. How do you know how to read? And he starts like chasing her. I just thought it was funny. Like back in the day, if like a woman could read, there were witches. but yeah, I definitely feel like this one had like that, the witch vibes as far as like the setting and the concept and the story structure and all that. And obviously in part two, we get into the whole reveal of the good. I thought he was like what you said, Sabrina, like kind of turning a blind eye, maybe the cover-up guy, but I didn't expect him to be like the man behind the curtain and to be the one who was actually summoning the demons and all that.
Again, they're winking at us. Nick Good. His last name is literally
Good. Oh, I know he was going to be 100%. Bad. 100%. But no, I just didn't expect it to be the main bad. I was
it's
like,
not.
Oh.
They didn't name him that to be like unironically like winking. Like they're 100% ironically being like, wink. Nick Good.
Get like, it? Do you get- good? Yeah. Like it's good. Supposed to be a hard wink. Yeah. I definitely caught that for sure, but I didn't expect him to be the main. Can I say something real quick before you jump in, RB3? One thing I caught on before I forget, this is kind of like the more I thought about it. So I thought about this when I saw part one, but when I finished part two, because we do get 1994 part two in 1666, because it actually gets that title card and it's like a continuation, it dawned on me, guys, this is literally Buffy. You guys didn't grow up on Buffy, but Buffy came out in 1997, and Buffy is also Sunnydale, and Buffy also has a hell mouth where bad stuff happens to the town. You guys haven't seen Buffy, obviously, so I'm kind of explaining it to you. But the more I thought about it, I was like, bad stuff happens to the town. Demons pop up all the time. And then they discover that beneath Sunnydale, it like literally like it's almost like the Maze of Tunnels thing, but like in Sunnydale, it's like a hellmouth where they're literally, the town is like a cursed town because it's over a hellmouth where all the negative stuff comes up and sprouts out of hell, and that's why it's like a little portal to hell. And we kind of see that throughout that movie with the heartbeat mm-hmm. thing where all the goo's yeah. coming out, and I was like, oh, when it disappears, it almost kind of goes down, and I was like, oh, it's like a hellmouth. This is literally Buffy. Like Joss Whedon got this from like maybe the books. I'm assuming maybe R.L. Stine kind of came up with that concept.
This is very, very, so maybe very they got loosely it from based Buffy. Off of it. So yeah, they might have because honestly
Buffy like, is from the 90s, so this is also a very 90s.
And there has been so. Things where of course there's like a portal or a source or whatever, but I really do like that connection.
It's literally the same name of the town, like Sunnydale, yeah. Sunnydale.
But you have to do it with Shady Side, which is again another thing of being like over the top, with like Sunnyvale, Shady Side. Like, it's like yes. the two polar opposites. Totally extreme, because wouldn't yeah. anyone just like move out of town? Yeah. Like if it was really that bad, there's other places that credits, you can move to.
Exactly. The opening credits tell you like this is supposed to be so cheesy, like so over the top. But yeah, I was just gonna say like that's another 90s horror reference, because Buffy's is 90s horror. And the concept is so similar that I was like, oh my God, it's Buffy. This is the same thing where like the sheriff and the mayor are the bad guy. And in Buffy, it's the same thing as well. RB3, I know you preferred this one the most for 1666. So kind of tell me about what you thought about this one.
Yeah, I mean, this one definitely felt like the most like cohesive, not cohesive, but I felt like it felt like the most like it had the most to say, you know, it had the most like weight underneath it. I felt like it leaned the least on like nostalgia and, you know, like vibes and like funny characters or whatever, and actually like focused on like the storytelling. And which it was essential, because these are like, this was an important part of the story, right? Like seeing who the witch is, seeing who Sarah is, like herself. That's the crux of the entire premise of this, you know, of this story. So I enjoyed actually that aspect of it. I enjoyed like experiencing, I enjoyed seeing that perspective. I enjoyed seeing the corruption like around that town that was very prevalent during that time period. Like, you know, y'all talk about The Witch is one of my favorite horror movies like recently, and because it deals with like the ideas of like early colonialization and how like there's like this fear of nature and that stemmed from, you know, text in the Bible with, you know, Adam and Eve and like the garden, the sacred garden, and how that kind of stemmed our like American like anti-nature isms, like how we have to go into the woods and hunt stuff and kill stuff. And even with Sarah, like she raises those pigs, she cares for those pigs until one of the pigs gets possessed and eats all the other babes, her own babes, and she has to take it out herself, you know. There's no room for error when this like this conflict between nature and people. Seeing that possession happen with the actual pastor himself and him taking out all those kids was just crazy too. So there's just, there was a lot of aspects in the actual 1666 part of it that was crazy. You know, even with the, you know, we're talking about like the lesbian relationship in the first movie and how that kind of translates way back in with that into like that generational trauma that we see in like this 1666, and how that relationship, that lesbian relationship ultimately ends up spawning like a whole witch hunt, you know, and how it kind of deals with like the Salem witch trials, how one person could claim, oh, like they were a witch and the whole town would just end up rolling with it, you know? And by the way, for a crime that a pastor committed that had nothing to do with these two girls, for literally nothing to do with them. So I just thought that was compelling. And then going back to like the 1994 part, like afterwards, I thought the justice aspect of it was cool to see, like, you know, Nick Good being this goody police officer actually be this wealthy, you know, backed person who's keeping this town down, which I think is a good commentary of like today. I feel like they really found a good way to incorporate like some today commentary in there with like the themes of rich people being behind like these really, you know, terrible things throughout history. And that's the same way with you know, I feel like that's the same theme. That's a similar theme to what like Lovecraft Country was getting at recently last year. Also, I think of like Ready or Not, like all these like old rich money people and our society who are have a vested interest in keeping that for themselves. So I thought that I thought those aspects of it was just really, really dope. And yeah. I thought, you know, to me, that's why it elevates a little bit more. To me, I felt like this one, I could probably, I don't know, I feel like this one, I was like, ooh, the meaning of, yeah, I get some meaning in this one. Yeah, I get some, could sink my teeth into this.
Yeah, and I feel like it all kind of culminates together really well as far as like a trilogy, right? Because when we finally get those reveals, we realize like this idea that Shadyside deserves what they're getting, and their poverty and their deception is based off their own sin and their own actions, when in reality, it's based off the wealthy and the rich kind of putting them down. And the actual people in power is the white dude who's been, is actually the one worshiping the devil and not the crazy lesbian chick, which is what people want to perceive it at, which I thought is a really clever idea, because there is an idea now, like you said, RB3, as far as like, I forget what it's called, but there's an actual term as far as like prosperity religion, where people believe that if you're rich, it's because God wanted it to happen and because God is blessing you. And if you're poor, it's because you did something bad and it's because you like worship Satan. And it's that kind of the opposite, when in reality, if you're rich and you've probably been putting people down at a certain point, and the people who are poor are being blamed for it, for things that they have nothing to do with. So I love that idea.
It's really interesting, because of course, like, we're introduced to Solomon Good, who is the one that starts this all in the Good family. And of course he is doing this all, this sacrifice of the town. And he's like, oh, what's a few lives here or there, as he takes the one life of the pastor and he took 12 kids with him. And then that continues on. And we see that going forward in the future with the history of this town. But what he wanted was like prosperity, wealth. So he was willing to have all of these people suffer every single generation. Basically, there's a new group of people that have to suffer, and this town continues to suffer, all so that they can have the wealth and different things like that. Being one brother being a mayor, one brother being a sheriff, they have a ton of money, they have a very nice house. It's like having that power and influence, especially if you're talking about like 1666, when a town is very, very small. So if you have one person that has a lot of power, they can basically do whatever they want. It's a little bit different in today's world. Like, a sheriff doesn't get to genuinely run a whole town. But then I do like that commentary on when somebody has all this power and all this perceived power, what do they do with it? How did they get to this point? I think you just said this earlier, Andres, but it's like, when somebody is very, very wealthy, it's like they probably have, if they're very, very wealthy, they've probably done something wrong in the past, or like underpaid workers, all different ideas of like looking up to the people that have like power and wealth and seeing the flaws and the cracks within them, and then how other people have to suffer kind of in their wake.
Yeah, it's that idea like somehow they were blessed for their wealth and they deserve it. And I really like how this movie kind of presents a premise as far as like the way that people viewed anything different or other being connected to evil or being connected to some sort of comeuppance for some sort of sin in the past, whether you're a nerd, you're a person of color, your interests don't align with someone else, you're in a relationship that someone doesn't agree with, like all that stuff is like, oh, that's evil, that's other, when in reality, it's kind of the opposite. Like, your perception of that and your judgment of that is coming from a place of your evil and how you're covering up your own damn evil, which is what the Good family represented, this generational idea of making this deal of pushing other people down in order for you to prosper, literally with demons and the devil and all this. And I was just like, that's cool, that's a cool concept.
Yeah. And starting out with like Seraphir, because obviously for centuries going forward, everybody talks about her legend and what she's doing to the town, even though it has absolutely nothing.
She's not even a witch.
One, wasn't a witch. Two, didn't do anything wrong and genuinely didn't curse the town. And I picked up on that like a hot minute ago. I was like, I know there's a lot more to this, because one, we had a whole nother movie and they were really unraveling all the pieces slowly. And the timing was really right, because a lot of stuff was kind of coming out of like left field. But once I started this third one, immediately I was like, okay, so there's always a person that is possessed and they're the ones that are murdering. But then there's like another person that has a connection to Sarah Fear. So obviously Ziggy had that connection because she bled onto the bones of the hand. And then of course we had our other character. I forgot her name, but the one of the ones in the relationship.
Samantha?
Yes. And so we had her, and she obviously bleeds on something too. And so like they get a glimpse of Sarah, but they're not actually possessed by her at the time. It's very, very interesting how like somebody's possessed and like murders and is supernatural, again, like strong and fast, and they can't be killed, and their terror is going to reign regardless. Which I think is absolutely insane. But yeah, I really, really just loved how they unraveled everything with Sarah Fear. And it just is so, so interesting and so compelling when we dive back into this story. And it does relate to it's horror, and we're afraid of this premise and we're afraid of what's happening to this town. But at the same time, everything else, it's not just the murders. It's not just like scary moment, thrilling murder. It's the way that we're looking at this town, and we're like, it is terrifying to be the person that you are when somebody could just immediately like point to you and go like, yeah, you're a witch. This person needs to be hanged, or whatever it may be. This blaming everything that's happening on the town, like the rotten food and all these other different things on one person, one young person, is so crazy. So even like the witch hunt is so, so thrilling, very, very scary, super exhilarating. I honestly found this to even be scarier than a lot of the straight up murders, just because of the way people were looking at her, and obviously knowing her perspective as an audience. I thought it was really, really cool to be able to step into Sarah Fear's shoes. I thought that was awesome. I originally, before the 1666 announcement, I thought we were just going to go through three different times, which would have been interesting, but I love that we went straight back to the beginning to kind of like unravel this mystery.
For sure. Yeah, that's definitely a good aspect, right? It's kind of going to tying it back up to 1994, which is what we get with 1994 part two. And obviously we go back with Ziggy, older Ziggy. We meet Dorian Parks as well in the movie, and he joins the crew. It was Dorian, wasn't it? I'm pretty sure that was him.
Looked like him.
I mean, he had the bandana and everything, bro. Like, you can't convince me otherwise. but kind of that idea, like you said, Sabrina, where that kind of idea, like the way they pointed at Sarah and said, this is all your fault. They could also point at Dorian and say, hey, you spray painted this place. I know you did it because look at you. And it's like, he never did. And it was actually Sheriff Good, or the way they can point at anyone else and be like, hey, you did this because you're weird or you're different or you're other. And that kind of concept of like, it's very simplistic.
Real but life it, horror.
Yeah, exactly. And it's very simplistic, but it works because it presents that kind of cover as far as like, you can just say, look at how I dress and look at how you dress. You must be wrong. You must be evil. You must be other or anything like that, whether it's dress or wealth or anything else, and use that as a weapon to, you know, justify any actions towards that person, which is kind of what we see nowadays with petty crimes or with like, you know, some kid getting busted for weed and then doing time. And it's like shit like that is like real. And that's why I kind of like the way they presented that as being the true evil and not the kid who's just literally not doing anything and just trying to survive. So, RB3, any final thoughts on 1666 and 94 part two?
No, I mean, this was definitely by far and away the best ones to me, you know. So yeah. I feel like it was a good conclusion. Maybe the buildup wasn't there, but the payoff was there. So
who do you think was the standout as far as acting, man?
I like our main character who played both.
She's great.
Dina and then Sarah in the
What do you guys think of that? What do you guys think of the whole like same actors, different characters kind of thing?
I thought it was smart. I think that really gets you connected in to like a window. I feel like at least like with Dina, like she, you know, she's kind of like our POV character through the movie. So kind of having her as Sarah really gives you like a face and like gives you humanity to that storyline.
Sabrina, what'd you think of that?
Yeah, 100% agree. I think the cast was really, really talented and even drove home further. Like even having the same actor that plays Nick play Solomon, you know, like no matter what it is, all these different pieces I thought were really beautifully brought together visually by having these actors portray these roles in this one.
Yeah, I like that touch as well. I also kind of like that they were playing the exact same character, but like 300, 400 years ago. Yeah.
It's kind of like this vicious cycle of like history repeats itself, it's parallels. Yeah.
It's supposed to represent almost like their ancestors kind of going through the same thing over and over again.
Yeah.
As far as the good family, but also her friends who were there, mm-hmm. Sarah Fierce friends who also were kind of the same character, but in a different era, or like the ancestors was kind of come from that era. What do you feel the standout was, Sabrina?
I definitely, Dino was absolutely fantastic, but I also really did love the brother as well. His name is Benjamin Flores Jr. He plays Josh and then Henry Fear. I thought he was so good. And then even like the scene in 1666, when everything that happened to the children in the town happens, it is just that much heart-wrenching because we have spent so much time with him and he brought this like charisma, this sweetness, this wholesomeness, and like a vulnerability to all of this. And just like a strength, like he was even pushing Dina and he was pushing everybody else to kind of unravel this. And he came with a lot of the clues because this is something that he's looked into. So he was kind of the intelligence behind this and he was coming up with a lot of stuff in the background. So he was definitely another standout.
Wow. We all kind of picked her, huh? Kiana is being definitely the main standout for sure. Shout out to Kiana, man. I think she's great. I feel like if there's anything good RB3 that hopefully you can celebrate from this movie or that we can celebrate from this movie is that I feel like a lot of maybe potential new actors can get a different chance. Cause I searched through a couple of them. I know her friend. I don't know. It's the one that the brother had a crush on. I don't know her name. Otherwise, but that actress, for example, is actually a pretty new actress. And same
Julia
with
Raywald.
Yes, her. I feel like she's a pretty, I feel like I went through her a little bit, her IMDb, and I feel like she's pretty new, as well as a couple other actors in this film, and throughout all three films. And I feel like that's kind of a good thing is that we're getting a perspective from a different cast of characters and not just a really familiar face. Like a Kiana and like her little brother and like her friend group that are not as well-known actors. And I think that's kind of a cool thing, as well as the 78 campers too are also kind of all known, not known actors, I mean.
And even the director, I mean, is a very, very, very new director. True. This is basically the biggest project that she's like ever worked on because she's done one horror independent film from like 2014 that's on Tubi for free, which actually has good reviews. So I'm definitely interested in checking that out.
I've heard of
but
it,
the way that these wrap up and end, there's so much room to explore other stories because like I said, like they didn't take anything directly from the books besides the fact that there was like an evil over the town, but they never really dive into it in any of the novels as far as I know. So there are plenty of stories to kind of like work towards.
Yeah, no, I really do feel like it's a great opportunity. The fact that we do have more women directors making bigger projects like this director, her name, I believe it's Lee. Is it Lee?
Yeah, like Lee Janiak.
Lee Janiak, Janiak. I feel like that's a great, cool concept, the fact that we have her do a major project because all three of these were shot at the same time, which was one giant shoot, which is kind of cool. And the fact that Netflix trusted her with a pretty big budget is also a pretty significant thing too, because I feel like the budget was pretty big. Overall, I mean, considering it was three films.
Yeah, I heard that they had like a 106-day shoot and that they went in order, like they did all like the 90s stuff and then they went to the 70s and then did the things. That's pretty insane. That's an awesome kind of like feat, like looking at that production.
I do got to say too, the one thing I did think that was like on a more positive side, when I was watching this, I thought, wow, this is way better than what the chapter one and chapter two thing was. You know what I mean? Like, because like, what they shot it so far apart, like, you know, the kids just weren't the same.
Yeah.
The story had inconsistencies. Like, I felt like if they would have shot the It chapter one, chapter two thing back to back, it would have, I think probably the chapter two would have felt like a little more slimmer, would have had a little more of the scenes that were in chapter one and chapter two. And at least like, to me, it felt like the pieces that they were establishing were like all intentional throughout. Like, and maybe that's maybe, you know, Sabrina, you're talking about like seeing it as more of like a little mini series. Like maybe that's the way I almost could like should have looked at it too. Cause I do feel like they did do a really good job of like keeping the continuity of everything, like really, really consistent in how they were setting up and ultimately paying off everything. So I do see, I did acknowledge that plan. I did, was like, okay, they did have a plan. It did pay off. So I like that, you know?
It's also cool thinking about how something like the success, because of course, It Chapter One became the highest grossing horror film of all time. I feel like that kind of stuff really tapping into this market, I feel like allows us to even be able to explore something like this. And there's going to be even more stories in the future that kind of come from how successful this was when we're dealing with actually interesting ideas, because when we look back at it too, it also deals with like homosexuality in like the 80s and all of these different themes and ideas that people were too afraid to touch before because of like backlash. But you see, which is probably why they didn't shoot it back to back, they had no idea if this was going to make a crap ton of money, and it did. So that is a film that 100% would have benefited, but because of that, other people I feel like are more willing to take the risk, like with something like this.
Absolutely. And I feel like it also presents a new audience with a similar kind of story structure and story concept, but with new characters, with a modern cast, with a diverse cast, something that is refreshing to see, to be honest. Something that can reflect kids nowadays. The kids nowadays come from all different backgrounds and characters and cultures. And I feel like that is kind of a cool concept as well. And they can kind of see themselves in these new kids. I feel like it works on that scale within itself. And I feel like if we look at it within that lens, it works as a trilogy of films for sure. And I feel like it gives a new opportunity for new actors, as I said before. Also, shout out to the good guy, Solomon Good and Nick Good. He's from Succession. I was trying to put out where I've seen this guy. And I was like, bro, where is he from?
Who's he in Succession?
He's Siobhan's boyfriend. Is it Siobhan? Is that her name?
Oh, really? Oh, he's that guy? Oh, he has a beard in this one then. He doesn't have a beard in Succession. Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't have a beard as a sheriff, but yes, that's him from Succession. It's the same guy. And I was like, I know this guy. I swear I do. I've seen his face. But yeah, he's from Succession. Shout out to him as well. And yeah, shout out to these movies, man. I appreciated them. And I know, obviously, RB3 kind of went in on them too. But I feel like overall, it's just a fun, good time. And like I said before, like, it's just vibes, man. That's all it is. And that's what I appreciated, at least on my end. I felt like for a lot of these stories, a lot of it can just be like a cool concept and a cool vibe with a couple cool characters here and there. And overall, they've came out pretty successful in my opinion. RB3, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you know, take my negativity with a grain of salt, I guess. Obviously, these things are successful. TikTokers are loving it. You know, people who are, teeny boppers are loving it. You know, like Spike Lee said when Green Book won the Oscar, it's not my cup of tea, you know, but the third one is up my alley, and I did think that one was cool. And and maybe I'll go back and revisit these with a little bit less serious lens, and I'll probably end up enjoying them a lot more. So
yeah, for sure. Sabrina?
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely love these. It was so much fun to be able to have something to look forward to the next week and to genuinely be invested into this whole new world of something that isn't an existing IP that we've already explored tons of times. I really, really love this. The second I realized that it was based off these books that I loved when I was a kid, I was basically hooked in, but I do love how they tackled all these different tropes and ideas and things like that that we've experienced in past generations, talking about the history of horror cinema and different things like that, kind of repackaging it and improving upon it for a new audience and a new generation, which I really, really appreciate.
Yeah, as I said before, I appreciated these movies. I appreciate seeing female directors get an opportunity. I appreciate seeing female leads get an opportunity, two female leads in a relationship get an opportunity as well to survive all three movies. That's rare too, because usually when we see these kind of characters, they die off in a movie or they die off in a series. But the fact that they get to survive, even that's groundbreaking, Sabrina. So I feel like stuff like that is appreciated on my front and on my end. And also as a future creator of horror mazes, Be on the lookout for Halloween Horror Nights with Fear Street characters and all the colorful characters that we got. Whether it's Ruby Lane pop-up. Singing her song and all that. Yeah, they did. Yeah.
They did like a pop-up thing already in Los Angeles.
But wasn't that like a premiere thing or
I might No. They did like a video store pop-up. Did you see that one? It was so cool. I'll have to send you a video. Everybody should check that out 100%. Marketing and all this stuff is so important when you're playing into things like this, because when people are able to like visit and experience these things actually, that it just makes it all the more interesting. So they had like a tiny little pop-up maze, I believe, in Los Angeles. But then I saw the premiere one too. That was cool.
Yeah. So shout out to all those cast of characters. I vibe with it, man. I vibe with Ruby Lane's song. Every time she sang her song. Spooky. I forgot the song what it was, but it was kind of cool and kind of spooky, right? I liked it.
You always hurt the ones you love or something like that.
It might have been, but just the way she sang it, I was just like, oh, I feel it. It's vibes, bro. I was like, yo, what's up, girl? But at the same time, I feel like overall it worked pretty successfully. So shout out to Netflix for releasing these movies the way they did too. So either way, guys, Sabrina, where can everyone find you?
You guys can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at SabrinaXMonica. Also on Twitter at SabrinaOnFilm.
RB3.
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at DirectorRB3.
And you can follow me at Squad Little Race Guys. Be on the lookout for some other videos this week. We might be doing a Space Jam thing. Who knows? Either way, we're going to be right here on First Cut as usual. So if you haven't subscribed, make sure you do so. Leave a like, leave a comment. That's the best way you can show us some love. Let us know if you agree with RB3 and if you felt like these movies were a little bit subpar, if you agree with Sabrina and I or whoever. All opinions are okay and welcome. Even though we got a little bit passionate in the very beginning, it's all good, guys. We appreciate each and every one of you guys. Either way, guys, the First Cut crew, peace out. Peace.